Hey, this is Napalm.
And this is Bender, and we're from Hiatus Coyote, and you're listening to the Jazz Spotlight.
Episode 80.
Welcome to the Jazz Spotlight, the podcast that gives you the insight and tools you need to be in the music industry today. Artists, authors, and top music industry experts give you actionable tips that will help you promote yourself the smart way. Here's your host, Jan Ilunga.
Hey everybody, welcome to episode 80 of the Jazz Spotlight Podcast, and we continue this series with the special guests from the Porre Jazz Festival. The first two episodes we had Norwegian saxophonist Marius Neset, and last episode bass player John Patitucci. And today, as I said, we carry on with that, and we have one of my favorite bands actually from Australia, a neo-soul quartet from Melbourne, Australia, Hiatus Coyote. And it's a special episode because it's the first double interview of the podcast. So we have two guests joining us, Napalm, the vocalist and guitar player, and bassist Paul Bender. So they're here with us and they share the story of the band, they talk about their new album, and they share some valuable tips that everybody shouldn't miss out on. You find the links to the show notes with everything Nay, Paul, and I talk about at thejazzspotlight.com/episode80. Let's hear it. Here is a music talk with Napalm and Paul Bender of Hiatus Coyote.
Hey everybody, welcome to a new episode of the Jazz Spotlight. I hope you're ready for this one. This one is gonna be fun because we've done over almost 80 episodes now, almost 80 different artists, people from the music industry, but this is actually the first double interview. So today we have actually two guests and not one. And they are members of the Grammy-nominated band from Melbourne, Hiatus Coyote, and they're here in Pori, Finland, where they perform for the first time and they present their new album, Choose Your Weapon. I'm so excited to welcome on the show Paul Bender and Napalm. Hey, Nay, how's it going?
Great. How are you? Just met some peacocks at the festival, so sun's out, so far so good.
How about you, Paul?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm very well. So, yeah, it's good to be here. It's your first time in Finland, so
yeah. And I know that you guys are like super busy. Paul, you were telling me that after the gig, you will be heading to Switzerland, which is like awesome, to Montreux. And you're very active. But before we talk more about your upcoming gigs, let's go back in time and let's talk about when you guys got together. You've been playing together for about 4 years, right? And you are, as I said, from Melbourne. So can you tell us how you came up with the idea, how you guys met, and who wants to answer?
Sure. We've been playing. It's almost coming up 5 years now. We all met in Melbourne. Melbourne has a really amazing music scene. There's a lot of it's a really supportive community. It's a lot of people doing really different kinds of things, and a lot of people doing, different bands of totally different styles, mm-hmm. and sort of cross-pollination of ideas. It was just kind of a cool thing where it sort of just fell into place between the four of us when we just first started playing together. It just made sense.
Awesome. And Ne, what do you remember about those days, about when you guys got together and, you know, you started to play professionally?
Well, I was already doing gigs solo, which is how Bender met me before the band. So, you know, I'd done some gigs professionally. But it was the first time with a band format. And I remember we rehearsed with some other musicians first and it didn't really click. And the music is really... I didn't have any theory training, and so it was really hard to get musicians because the songs that I write aren't typical, and I didn't know the language mm-hmm. to be able to, you know, teach other people. So when I first got together with Bender, he I went over to his house and mm-hmm. just recorded all my material, and then he chord charted it all out, which is crazy. Like, to be able to do that by ear mm-hmm. is amazing. Yeah, so, but then when we had our first rehearsal, like, mm-hmm. we did, you know, Simon, because Perrin plays kit, Simon plays keys. Mm-hmm. He's such an intuitive player that, you know, we didn't really need them anyway, and that was so, so refreshing, you mm-hmm. know, because it's just like to be able to have complex music but be with musicians that are, yeah, that listen and that are creative and intuitive mm-hmm. enough to just interact with it
right.
in their own way was really amazing. And so, yeah, just the natural musical chemistry just fit really well. And, you know, we did our first gig at a like, bohemian masquerade mm-hmm. ball. And about 6 months later recorded Talk Tomahawk, which was, like, the first thing I'd ever recorded. And mm-hmm. we were just kind of getting used to each other and writing and stuff like that. So it was a really unique way to develop your sound as a band
mm-hmm.
in a recording context, because right. you just have so much more colors to work mm-hmm. with, and it's kind of like, yeah, there's something really exciting about learning who the other musicians are through right. the recording process, because it's just like you can go so much deeper with it creatively.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, we just kind of, yeah, toured our faces off because it blew off, and, you know, and we've just finished an album, and yeah, it's really eclectic but organic, because mm-hmm. we trust each other creatively, you know, right. like everybody feels free to contribute their ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And even if it's not like, oh, I have a whole song, it could just be like, oh, you know, I've been listening to this really bizarre, you know, gamelan music
mm-hmm.
from Indonesia lately, and I just really love the scales, and so I, you know, I want to try and maybe do something based on that. Like, it could mm-hmm. be as simple as that. And, like, you know, there's this jovial creativity element to it where everyone is willing to try whatever random idea anyone mm-hmm. wants to bring to it. So it's really cool.
And obviously now you, for the last couple of years, you have been really performing like all over the world. You've been like, now you're back in Europe. You've been in Europe before. You've been really around. And I think that you broke out, you broke through internationally with your Grammy nominated song, Nakamura. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to ask you guys, since, you know, when it comes to kind of building buzz, being from Australia is not on your side, geographically speaking, because, you know, all the other parts of the world, especially if you think about the States or Europe, are so further away. Maybe I can start with you. What do you think have been the challenges in really, you know, kind of getting the band name out there internationally?
Yeah, I mean, definitely the geographic challenge. But we were really lucky because we had a lot of support early on, and it was, you know, it's like that classic thing of just there was a lot of luck involved. Mm-hmm. We ended up doing a show with Taylor McFerrin
right.
and in Australia. We supported him, and he really liked the music, and then he continued his tour and told a lot of people about our music, so that sort of started the ball rolling.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, it's still like a challenge now because from our situation, you know, if you live in Europe or you live in the States, you know, you have a lot of places that you can go and do shows, and you can, you know, you could just be like, well, I'm just going to go do these shows and I'm going to be away for like a couple of days right. and I'm going to come back. For us, you know, like just to take into account the flights that we have to do, it just means that when we go on tour, we have to really, you know, we have to do at least like a month or like 5 weeks
mm.
at a time just to make it sort of worthwhile. So that's definitely a challenge, and that's like mm. a trying part of it, because, you know, it makes the balance between normal life and touring kind of difficult. I mean, you know, like a lot of big acts from Europe and US do that anyway, mm. but I guess for us it just means we never really had that option to do like a casual right. tour. Let's just go away for the weekend and yeah. play a few shows. It's not like that. We have to really like go all the way in. But in terms of getting out there, like, you know, we were we were lucky to kind of have some people helping us out from the get-go. You know, and we self-released the first record, right, and it was just on Bandcamp. And, you know, and that sort of, that just sort of did its thing, you know, when other people started picking up on it. But luckily, because we had management at that point, manager Cy, Jay Gould, who's based in Melbourne, he really helped us with kind of having the other stuff together that you need to follow it up with.
Right.
You know, it's like, I would definitely, you know, it's like, just you just got to have all the other stuff there in place, because if suddenly people like listen to your stuff, but you've only got like one song on your SoundCloud and like no photos and no YouTube stuff, then suddenly you've got to get that all together really quickly, because you've got to have other stuff to keep people, you know, satisfied. So I would highly recommend anyone who really takes their group seriously to think about that stuff, you know, get photo stuff done, you know, get onto media stuff, and like definitely have, you know, record your gigs, you know, video, get someone to video some of your shows, like have that content there. Cause that was massive for us. Cause when we first went to the States, we, you know, it was like, so we're going to a country, a huge country that we've never been before, and only having one record out that we'd put out ourselves, and going to all these shows and having like rooms full of people who know all these songs, and all these songs that weren't even on our record, you know, just because we had like a live YouTube version up.
Right.
And we don't even like the live version of anything. Like, we just listened to it and we're like, this sucks. Like, we hate it. We hate listening to it because we can hear everything that's not good about it, like the playing or the mix or the tempo or something. But ultimately, you know, other people aren't quite as picky as we are, really, and they just really like the songs. And so they already knew all the songs when we got there. So that was a massive, massive thing for us.
And
made a huge difference.
And, you know, before I pass the mic over to Nate, I just wanted to make a comment on what you said. I think, you know, you touched on many key points there to really have that things in place. So you talked about the importance of, you know, having a few songs, taking care of, having professionally a shot pictures, you told us sometimes that some great things also happen by accident. So you didn't want to, or you didn't like those versions that you had on YouTube, but they worked out to be a very good move for you guys in terms of building buzz and getting new fans also overseas. And to you, Ne, I want to ask you to tell us more about your new album, Choose Your Weapon. So you're here in Pori for the first time. And I'm sure you're gonna, in your set, you're gonna include quite many songs from Choose Your Weapon. So where did you guys get the idea behind this new record?
Well, it's just kind of a documentation of our history as musicians together and before, you know, like it's not like the traditional context where, you know, like band gets signed and then they go away and make an album from scratch. Like, all the material has been, like, there's some songs that I wrote when I was, like, 16.
Okay.
There's some songs that we wrote about a week before we had to hand the record in, because we just wanted to, like, have interludes to connect songs together. So it's kind of like a tapestry of the history of us as musicians.
All right.
And it's like there's always new details and information added to that, you know. So, but Choose Your Weapon, the thing is, you can have multiple parts, and they're different themes for every song. So there's like, you know, a big part for me as a songwriter lyrically was that there's so many love songs in the world, or like the content of what people actually talk about in music is kind of, you know, pretty trivial most of the time. And so I'm very conscious when I'm writing that I, you know, try to write about different themes and stuff. Like there's a song that's a tribute to Atari game consoles, but it's also like a reference to, like, you know, that that wonder that you experience when you're a kid, essentially. And like, but that interactive wonder where it's not just like you're absorbing some information, it's like it's interactive. There's a song that's a tribute to Stevie Wonder that's got like references to like Tuareg silversmiths, because I was listening to a lot of Kora at the time, which is like an African harp. So there was elements in the actual sonic mm-hmm. Depiction of the song, but so lyrically, you know, there's flavors of that, and you know, there's a version of Michael Jackson's Thriller. Right. It's just like, it's, you know, it's important for us to, they're kind of like mini movies in their own mm-hmm. right, which is really fun when you actually go to document it, because you can just be more playful with the sounds. Mm-hmm. You know, like if you have a theme, then you're like, okay, well, like, for example, with Atari, our keys player, Simon Maven, went away and he came back and he made a mini version of the chorus, but downloading like all 8-bit Atari mm-hmm. sounds. And that's just like a little outro. And he's like, what do you think about this? And I was like, yeah, that's awesome. You know, and I think it's really important to have that sincerity and exploration as a musician. Mm-hmm. You know, like people tend to think that to be successful, you have to make music that is popular or that other people are going to like. But mm-hmm. at the end of the day, like, if you know, you should make the music that you want to hear.
Right.
And there would always be someone for it. Mm-hmm. You know, like, it'll be someone's jam somewhere in the world. So it's just really amazing that it's been picked up and we have ears all over the world that are responding to the music. And and it's really humbling. It's really cool to just, like, be able to be giant nerds and travel the world and do what we love. And you have people writing to you telling you how it helps them. And, I mean, that's why we're musicians. You know, like, you're part of a legacy of creating sanctuaries for people
mm-hmm.
in whatever form that may be. And so, I mean, music has always been that for me. So it's really cool to, like, be on the other side and, mm-hmm. like, offer that to people.
And what about you, Bender? What does Choose Your Weapon represent for you personally?
Well, yeah, I guess it's, I don't know, it's one of those things that, like, everything we do in the band, it's sort of up to the listener to decide what that really means. Mm-hmm. I guess for me, it's sort of, you know, you can think of, like, anything as a weapon. Like, it can, mm-hmm. it can be, anything can be used to combat something else.
Right.
So, you know, music is definitely, like, a kind of weapon against, like, you know, mm-hmm. negative emotions and even, like, negative, like, physical things. Mm-hmm. Like, I find it really interesting, like, there's looking at scientific experiments where people do experiments with sound.
Oh, right.
And stuff where, like, people use, like, show how water is affected by mm-hmm. sound mm-hmm. when your body is, like, 70% water, and seeing what sound does to water. You know, it's just like when you're standing in front of a bunch of people and you're sort of projecting these vibrations at them, like, what is that doing to them? And, you know, it's like there's that sort of physical aspect, but then there's the really abstract aspect of, like, how our minds and emotions, like, interpret these sounds and sort of unlock certain things
mm-hmm.
in us, you know. And that's, you know, even for me, it's like, for me, the music is like, it's like a weapon for overcoming my own negativity as well.
Right.
'Cause, like, so often, like, especially being on tour, you just can just be wrecked so often. It's like running on no sleep and before the show.
Peacocks, and the wild peacocks.
Yeah. And sometimes before the show, I'm just like, I can't deal with anything. I can't deal with anyone. I'm just, like, really low energy. And then you just go into this room and you, like, create this big sound together and all these people in the crowd throw their energy back at you. And then when you come off stage, it's just like, whoa, you feel, like, utterly transformed.
Right.
So, you know, it's an amazing, it's an amazing thing. It's like an amazing, job that we have. Like, it's such a strange role that we've chosen. And it is, like, it's definitely a form of magic, you know? Yeah.
So. And, you know, guys, this conversation has been awesome. And to wrap up, I want to touch on the last point, actually, Paul. You now have been performed in so many different cities, in so many different countries. And you guys, you have your style. So, you know how to capture an audience. But sometimes also, you know, the way people experience your performance can be different from country to country because of, you know, how people are doing things culturally, how they experience music. So do you have maybe some tips for the listeners, or maybe you can share something if there is something you guys do when, you know, you maybe face different audiences and maybe you get a feeling that, okay, this is not the kind of reaction we expected.
I mean, it definitely changes like all the time, and sometimes there'll be an audience you think will be really crazy and aren't, and other times there'll be an audience that you think is going to be really reserved, but then they're not, and that's always surprising. Especially, it's really great when you go to a place and you play a show, and it just goes crazy, and all the people like who you know the promoters and stuff, mm-hmm. they're like, "Wow, this is not normal for you."
Vienna, we played a jazz festival, and it was like all seated, very polite.
Yeah,
and like halfway through, I was just like, "We're not having this." And everyone got up, and it was like the energy. It was like one of the most raucous gigs we've ever done. But it was like in the beginning, it's a combination between learning to be adaptable to your environment, right. but also sometimes creating your own environment because people just naturally do what they think they're supposed to, and like. You know, like, for example, you can't – I watched this amazing footage of Stevie Wonder in the 60s in Brazil.
Right.
And you look at the stage and they are cooking so, so hard, like so hard. And then a song will finish and it will pan to the audience and it's like super polite here.
In Brazil.
It was in the 60s. Yeah. And I was just like – and we'd just done a show where I was kind of like letting that get to me that my – you know, it's hard to give when your audience doesn't give you anything. But regardless, you should try to perform your best. You know, like there's people like, oh, well, whatever. This doesn't matter because it's like it's just a filler gig. Right. But I feel like people sometimes they are afraid, and it's like you can show them that like your whole point of being there is to give them some kind of release.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it's kind of like a spider, you know, you think you're scared of a spider, but it's probably more scared of you. Right. And so you just kind of like, you know, sometimes you walk into a room and your audience is really like, they don't give you anything, but maybe it's because they're insecure or they don't know how to. Mm-hmm. And then there's other versions where like you'll play a gig and you're like, well, they hated it because like it was so quiet. And then at the end there's like, you spend 2 hours at the merch desk because people just like want to talk to you. And, and there's different, you know, like Europe versus the US, for example, is a lot like Americans are very like shout things out of you while you're singing. And it's all like you're like this one, like it's raucous and it's crazy. And sometimes you'll do like a jazz festival, for example, you know, like we did one in Rotterdam and it was like hella quiet and you think they don't like it, but it's just because they're listening and they're just interacting with the music in a different way. And so you can't let your insecurities get the better of you, like because all you can do is offer your best, and you never know, that may really help somebody, and that could be life changing for somebody. And I guess just approach it with the same vigor that you would depending on any situation. Yeah,
I think those are great words for wrapping up the interview. Now, Paul, thank you so much for being here on the podcast, for taking time for the listeners and for, you know, for your great music. I really appreciate it.
No worries. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having us.
And we are back. Nay, Paul, thank you so much. That was very fun. And I really appreciate the fact that you took time off your busy touring schedule to be here on the podcast. And it was fun to do a double interview. I had great time. So thank you guys. And thank you for your music. Your gig rocked. So thanks for that too. And you heard, guys, I mentioned that in the intro, you find the show notes with everything Nay, Paul, and I have talked about at thejazzspotlight.com/episode80. Next episode, we're gonna continue with the series. We have a few more coming up. They are all great with great artists who share their inspiring stories and more tips. So make sure to tune in on Thursday. In case you don't want to miss out on any episode, the best way to do so is simply to subscribe to the podcast so you can go to iTunes or Stitcher or your favorite platform and just look for The Jazz Spotlight. Hit the subscribe button so that you get the latest episode as well as all the previous ones, the 77 from season 1, the couple from season 2, today's episode, everything on your smartphone or tablet. Jan here, thank you so much for joining Nay, Paul, and I in this fantastic episode of The Jazz Spotlight, and I'll be back with you on Thursday with another incredible guest. Take care.